It's a show about women, for women, and empowering women. This is Cocktails and Conversation with Maureen Moore on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Everyone, this is Maureen Moore with Cocktails and Conversation here on 590 The Fan. And today I have some wonderful, phenomenal, just really some kick butt women, you know. And the thing is, it's Christine Gooding and Robin Lewis here with me. They are two educators that are extremely extraordinary. I think that's probably the best term I can use. I had the fortune to meet with them a few weeks ago after I had spoken with Bob Dahm in their program as well. And so luckily enough, I got to meet with them. And with Saddleback Chocolates and Kismet, we actually are able to work with their team and with their students now. So without further ado, I am introducing Christine Gooding and Robin Lewis. Christine and Robin both work for District 201, and it's the Bridges program. And I'm going to just say welcome, ladies, and thank you so much for being here today. And
thank you. Thanks for
having us. Tell us more about you guys, you know, where you're from, what, you know, criminy, to get into education and become educators. I mean, right there, it's a humbling, wonderful position, career, but it's one where I wish you all got paid 12 times more than you get paid, you know?
So do I.
So do you, Robin? Yeah, so do you, yeah. Christine doesn't care. Christine's all not, she's not about the money at all, right, Christine? Yeah.
No,
yeah. So anyway, Christine, tell me a little bit more about yourself. Where do you hail from? Background, you know, everything. Just kind of start with that if you don't mind. And then, and Robin, we're going to do the same. And with this being a conversation, we all talk over each other all the time.
Yeah, we do that at school.
We do that. So yeah.
You do that yes. At school a lot?
That's a daily.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Belleville.
Uh-huh.
My family's from Belleville, so I'm kind of a hometown kid.
You're a Watkins.
I am a Watkins, yes. So I have a lot of educators in my family.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother was an educator. My parents were both educators. Had uncles and cousins.
Yeah.
My brother did Teach for America for a while. So education's in my blood. I've known that from the time I was little, I wanted to go into education.
Was it expected of you, or was it just something you knew was going to be your love?
I don't think it was expected. I just, that was my experience. You know,
mm-hmm.
I saw one thing that really is memorable for me as a child, going out into the community or being at the store and my parents running into their former students.
Yeah.
Which I thought was so cool. Like they were like local celebrities when I thought like, oh, they're just my parents, you know. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people knew them, and I thought what a neat profession to really have an impact on
mm-hmm.
on, you know, the kids in the area. So I knew I wanted to go into education. So going through school, it wasn't until I got to high school at Belleville East that I actually volunteered as a student worker in a special education classroom.
Really?
And fell in love with it, and then I was like, I am absolutely going to become a special educator.
So, who was the special ed teacher there then?
Michelle Senchin was the teacher I worked with.
Mm-hmm.
She actually, I played tennis. That was my freshman year.
Did you? You played tennis at East?
I did,
I played for Altoff.
Oh, did you?
Yep.
Yeah, I played two years.
Of course,
years.
In different centuries, literally.
Oh, my Maybe God. Not.
Yeah.
No, I played 2 years until I hurt my back. But Michelle
uh-huh.
Senchin was, she helped out with the tennis team and kind of got me involved as a student worker. And, you know, usually student worker jobs are kind of an easy gig, get you out of study hall. But I really enjoyed working with the students, and I had decided at that point I wanted to go into special ed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been nice, you know, throughout going through college and having so many educators in my family, it's been really, they've been nice resources to have.
Mm-hmm.
To lean on and really talk through experiences, you know, through student teaching and starting my first job. I actually started teaching in District 201. My first actual job was covering for Robin's maternity leave. Second semester Jeez. Of...
Years ago.
Yeah.
It seems like.
What year was that?
It was like 11 years ago.
Did you look like a baby, you know?
Well, I am not the baby in the crowd here. So when Christine was in high school still, I was teaching at Belleville East.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay. There are several years between us.
Yeah.
She's quite a bit older than me.
Quite a bit older. And then I'm another whole century.
No.
So that's kind of scary. Oh, my gosh. So that's cool. So, okay, so you started... And where'd you go to college?
So I started at Mizzou, got a little homesick, and finished at SIUE.
Okay. Mike Moore's alma mater.
Hey, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then ended up, you know, I started teaching in the classroom at Belleville East my first year. And my second year, I applied for the vocational coordinator position in the Bridges program. And that second year that I was in the district and doing this job and working with businesses, I felt that I needed to go back and get my MBA because I really had no understanding of business and how it worked. So I actually got my MBA and felt, you know, actually Robin has her MBA also.
Oh, I know. I know. Now she's working on her PhD.
Yes.
Yes, yes, it's like, okay, listen, little brainiac, you know.
Yeah.
I have my PhD in one thing. It's called, okay, we have horses, and I know where the manure pile is, you know. That's about it.
Yeah. So, you know, I've known that I've wanted to be an educator, and I was just kind of guided into special ed based on my interests and experiences, and it's really paid off. I mean, I really thoroughly enjoyed, you know, doing this, working in the Bridges program throughout the years and working with the students. I mean, we have... quite honestly, the best students, I feel like.
Well, they're loyal. They're loyal. They're excited. They want to learn. They want to be a part of everything. You know what I mean? They're not looking at their iPhone every 12 seconds and texting and Instagramming and all that. Some of them are.
Some of them are.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
More like gaming.
Yeah, okay.
Very tech savvy.
Yeah, are they?
Yes. Yeah.
That's good. And, you know, so Robin, tell us a little bit about you and where you're from, where you hail from, because then I want to get into that Bridges program too, you know, so that'll be cool.
Okay, well... I was born and raised in a small town called Olney, Illinois.
Is that the home of the white? It's the home of the white squirrels.
Absolutely.
Yes, because I used to play in a tennis tournament over there.
Yes.
And in Flora. We used to play in Olney and Flora and
Fairfield.
Fairfield. Yes.
Sure.
We used to play in those tennis tournaments in the summer.
That's where I'm from. Born and raised.
Do they still have white squirrels over there now?
We still have white squirrels.
Why don't you catch a few and bring them over to St. Clair County? That way they could have them in St. Clair County.
Well, we have a lot of gray squirrels now.
Oh,
we've had a little inbreeding.
There's been some inbreeding going on. There's been a little bit of cross pollination,
right? Exactly. So the white squirrels are hard to find, but we do an annual count every year. So
really,
super exciting, right?
Wait, Christine, don't you want to know in Robin's world, like who gets to do the annual count and how they do the annual count?
Right,
of the squirrels?
I would be very interested.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I've never done it.
Yeah.
But my friend Katie could tell you.
Do they have them all? They got to have them tagged or something.
Well, they do. Like, I think people, anybody can do it.
Uh-huh.
And so they give a different number. Everybody gets a section of the county, essentially, to scour. So you get your section and you scour it and count how many squirrels that you saw. And then they compile all those numbers together.
Oh, yeah. It's very
scientific. It's really official.
Very accurate. Oh, yeah. It sounds so accurate.
It's really
official. Ooh.
Well, that's how we do things.
Yeah. Over in Aldi. Yeah. Are your folks still over there?
My parents still live there, yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I'm a first-generation college graduate.
Really?
So I'm super proud about that. Mm-hmm. I joined the military my junior year of high school.
ROTC?
I joined the National Guard.
Okay.
And because I needed a way to pay for college, and that was going to be the way.
Okay.
So that's what I did. I joined the Army National Guard. I went to basic training like 2 weeks or 3 weeks after high school graduation. Went to Fort Leonard Wood and... I ended up starting college 2 weeks late because my basic training ran over into my first semester of college at SIUE.
But you should also share your plane story.
Jumping out of the plane. Yes.
Oh, when you had to jump out of a plane?
Well, okay.
On purpose?
It was on purpose.
Okay.
Right. So I'm one of those type A personalities. I'm going to do everything to the extreme. So I joined ROTC when I went to SIUE.
Okay.
And my junior year, they were sending, you have to go to a camp through ROTC in order to get your commission whenever you graduate to be eligible for commission. So they had a couple of slots open for airborne school. And I said that I would go. And so they sent me to airborne school before they sent me to my summer training camp that would have allowed me to become commissioned. And during that school, I was on the next to last jump. You have to do 5 jumps, I think, in order to be a certified airborne person. And the next to last jump, I was the first person out of the plane. It was like a mass exit, people coming out of both sides. And the person that came out after me was much heavier than I was.
Oops.
And so got too close to my parachute and it collapsed my parachute.
Oh my God. Did he catch you?
No. I did. The ground caught me. I did about a 60-foot free fall straight into the ground and I broke my back. So.
Oh my God.
Right. Right. So that was a traumatic experience and the end of my military career.
Oh yeah.
But if that event wouldn't have happened, a lot of things wouldn't have happened for me in my life as it is right now.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have been a special educator at that time because I did love the military. I would have been a commissioned officer.
Mm-hmm.
So I am a firm believer that everything happens for a reason. So that event, I think, happened for a true reason. I was studying special education in college, but I wouldn't have gone directly into special education had that not happened.
You'd have been an officer.
I would have been an officer.
You would have been an officer and you would have traveled the world and you would have been protecting us in all different parts of the world.
And I would have loved it.
Yeah, and you would have loved it.
I would have loved it.
So what did they do to the guy that landed on you?
Well, he didn't land on me and I don't even know who the guy was.
You don't know who it was?
I have no idea who it was.
Oh, my God. Christine.
No idea.
We would have known.
Found out his name.
We would have known who it was. I would have said, you're on a diet now, you know, and you're going to, you know, the fact that you landed on my parachute.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. You really don't know?
I have no clue.
What a nice person you are.
Well, I didn't have really any choice. I wasn't going to jump up and go chase after him or anything.
So. Yeah, but I would have had everybody hunting him down and going, ah, because he probably landed nice and softly and cushy.
I'm sure he did.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't know that it was going to, what was happening as it was happening. I just.
Knocked out.
I just felt like I was coming down super fast.
You could have been paralyzed, truly, when you're laying on the ground.
I'm lucky. I very well could have been.
Yeah, you really could have been.
I very well could have been. So I was very lucky in that aspect. So I had to recover and finish my last year of college and decided that, well, I guess I'm going to be a teacher now for real.
Yes, I'm not going to be jumping out any more planes.
Yeah. Right. So I taught for 1 year teaching a fifth grade classroom in Alton.
Uh-huh.
And then it's actually quite by luck that I got this job in District 201.
Mm-hmm.
I had a job, like I said, in Alton, and I got a phone call really early on a Saturday morning by the principal at Belvalise saying that he wanted me to come in for an interview. And I said, oh, no, thank you. I have a job. I'm good. I already have a job. And I hung up the phone, and my husband said, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You need to call them back and go for the interview.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it might be a better job.
Yeah.
Thank goodness I did. Thank goodness I did, because I've been there for 18 years, and I love it.
So how does somebody like find you on a Saturday morning and say, I'm going to call this gal and see if she's interested?
I mean, don't know.
How does that happen where people are poaching, you know,
I guess
educators?
I had sent my resume the year prior.
Oh,
so
okay.
They were going through old resumes.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm thinking, how did they just all of a sudden go, okay, there's a few over at Belleville East and Belleville West we could go grab, you know?
Yeah, I don't think they typically cherry pick teachers.
Yeah, no, it was wondering.
He had saved my resume from before.
Okay. Wow.
Must not have made the cut the year before.
Well, because you couldn't land when you came out of a plane. You could only flop when you came out of a plane.
Right. I guess that's what it was.
Yeah, that's what it was. Oh, my gosh. So, Alney and Belleville. Where'd your parents teach in Belleville, Christine?
They've been kind of all over. My dad taught in District 201. He's been back and forth between East and West.
Yeah.
My mom taught a little bit in 201. She is currently teaching at the alternative school in Belleville.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. Wow. So they're still teaching.
Yeah. My dad's retired, I should say. Okay, my dad is retired. My mom's semi-retired. It's kind of a part-time job at the alternative school.
God love her. Because that's got to be a challenge every day. There's never 2 days like there, I'm sure.
Right. Well, she enjoys it. I mean, she really has. She coordinates, kind of does the similar things to what I do, coordinates work sites for students. So.
Okay. Well, in my Saddleback Chocolates and Kismet, you know, I think I want more of your kids instead of the alternative kids that could kind of go, okay, great, we're going to take this, we're going to sell it on the street, you know?
Yeah.
Your kids won't take it and sell it on the street.
No.
So, okay, so, you know, let's go ahead and think about, you know, as we've kind of come forward, we've got a few minutes, we'll take a break, and then we'll come back. But before we go to break, so Christine, you married the love of your life?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
I was kind of questioning
that. Was that
Robin? Are we leading her along?
Yeah,
you know,
I don't
remember
know.
That. Remember, you did.
No.
You know?
Yes. No. Yes. I. Yes. My husband, Chris, is wonderful. We dated in high school. And actually, I should kind of tell you, I think I told you this when we met. My husband's name is Chris. I'm Christine. And my parents are Pat and Patty. So as soon as we started dating in high school, people were like, you have to get married just because of your names. I mean, yeah. It only makes sense. But no, he is great.
Good.
And I have two kids. My daughter, I am happily married. I have two kids. My daughter is Addison. She's six, and she's in kindergarten.
She's beautiful, too.
Oh, yeah, you have seen
her.
She
is beautiful.
And my son, Landon, is 2.5.
And he's talkative. With that, we will be back shortly. This is Maureen Moore here on Cocktails and Conversation on 590 The Fan. Catch us on Saturdays at 12 noon and again at 7 a.m. on Sunday mornings. But you can always catch our podcast, too, when you're working out or just dusting at the house. Or if, you know, the other thing is if you're just really in your office working really hard and going over briefs. So anyway, it's Cocktails and Conversation. I'm here with Christine Gooding and Robin Lewis. We'll be right back.
We now return to Cocktails and Conversation with Maureen Moore on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Maureen Moore on 590 The Fan with Cocktails and Conversation. And today we are interviewing Christine Gooding, an MBA with the District 201 Bridges Program, and Robin Lewis, soon to be Dr. Robin Lewis, because she has her MBA, but she's working on her PhD, very close to finishing. And she's with the Bridges Program, too, in District 201. But we're here on Cocktails and Conversation today talking about the wonderful aspects of education, being happily married, as we can actually say we are all happily married. Mike Moore, that means I'm including you in that as well. And the other nice thing is we were just talking about our kids. Robin, I know you have a precious daughter that we still have to talk about. So
I do.
Tell me.
Her name is Narisi. She's 6 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
In kindergarten, getting ready to go into the first grade, and she is a
I bet she runs
fire.
The show.
Oh, you nailed it. Uh-huh. How did you know? You've never met her.
I have great intuition.
Narisi runs the show. She
oh
really does.
Oh, my gosh. So will she listen to this and have all her friends listen?
She will listen to it, I'm sure, and will replay it.
That's great.
Just to hear her name.
She can replay it, say it over and over, and she can replay it at school.
Sure.
All the other teachers will hear, the superintendent, the principal, the school janitor. So everybody's going to be listening to Cocktails and Conversation because of Narisi.
Because of Narisi.
Uh-huh. See, so there you go.
There you go.
So ladies, you both have daughters. Let's talk about that for a second. Mm-hmm. You know, who mentored you and how would you mentor young women now, especially going into education? Would you tell them to go into education? Would you encourage them to go into education? Boy, I'm getting some looks here.
I know. I don't know who wants to go first.
Okay.
Well,
Robin?
I don't know that I can pinpoint anybody exactly who has mentored me.
Mm-hmm.
I know growing up, I saw kind of how we lived as a family. And I had a very happy
Your mother was happily married, too.
Yeah, she was happily married, too, and so was my grandmother. But, you know, we lived on a pretty strict budget, and I saw all the struggles that my family kind of went through and realized for myself that I didn't want to have to feel like I needed to struggle to get the next meal on the table or what have you. So I've always had the ambition of going to college, figuring out a way to do it myself. So I've always kind of had that mindset that if I'm going to do something, I've got to do it myself.
Okay.
I think for my daughter, I would want her to also have the mindset that you have to kind of go in fighting for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but I hope that she wouldn't have to feel like she's alone in that battle. I hope that she is able to kind of look around her for people who can help her along the way. For me, I feel like sometimes I get tunnel vision and I don't always look for people who are surrounding me that can help me along the way.
Help lift you up at the same time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, in talking about that, now, Christine, I know you're just dying to jump in. I can see it on your face. Go ahead, because then I got some follow-up thoughts on all that. Go ahead, Christine.
Well, I think, you know, I kind of the same as Robin. I haven't had one specific person that has mentored me. And, I feel very grateful of the people that I've worked with along the way. You know, we worked with, Carol Frances Jorns, who retired last year out of our program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was with her my second year of teaching. And, you know, when you're young and you're a first or second year teacher, you're very impressionable and moldable. Mm-hmm. And she was really a good influence on me. Mm-hmm. I feel like I learned a lot from her, not only like what to do in situations, but also what not to do. She would say, do as I say, not as I do. Mm-hmm. I think her motto is, don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness. So she is that.
I live by that.
She was really a kind of a trailblazer. And she said, as long as you always have the student's best interest at mind, mm-hmm. you're not in the wrong. You may have, you know, may have to navigate some things. But she, you know, she always had good advice and good suggestions and was really kind of a sounding board. And mm-hmm. it was nice to work pretty closely with her my second year of teaching, because I always had her as like, hey, you know, what would you do in this situation? Or how would you handle this parent? Or how could we better support this student? And she has a really good vision. She's worked with kids with disabilities for a long time. So she has a lot of experience and really is just a wealth of knowledge.
And we still refer to her today.
Do you really? Like,
yeah. She retired last year, but she has subbed 80 of the school days already. So she's in our program.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, because she loves it so much. Yes. And that's just a testament to how committed she is to students with special needs. So she really has been a mentor for me as well. Mm-hmm. And even just yesterday, we were sitting around philosophizing on how we are going to meet the needs of this particular group of students that we're mm-hmm. having some challenges with. And so it's really not, and I still reach out to her and text her. And so we've missed her a lot, mm-hmm. but glad that she's still around and willing to give us some suggestions and ideas, because honestly,
sounds
mentor
like
and supporter,
well,
yeah, she has been.
Absolutely. And the way our program functions, we're not in a classroom. So it's not like we are isolated. We have to work as a team, and you can lean on the other people and their experience. I mean, we all bring different things to the table. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Robin's strengths are my weaknesses, and some of my strengths are her weaknesses. Mm-hmm. So we complement each other very well.
And each other out.
Yeah, and it's really nice to have access to people like Carol, who are willing and wanting and have the same kind of goals for the students that we do.
Well, educators, I think, are innate as far as really being team oriented. You know, they're all about working together and having trying to put a plan together that's going to work for everyone and everyone involved, and try to come out with a common goal, you know, and a few common goals. And I always saw that with our Leaders in Education program when I ran that for Peabody Energy, you know, that was one of our, even though it was, it was our one of our missions, you know, as far as with Peabody, as far as education, you know, this was the founding source of community relations for Peabody. And it was really education and educators and how they inspire others to succeed, and how, you know, because what you guys are doing on a daily basis is you're not just dealing with, you know, Johnny Black that's a junior and going to do well on his ACT and he's going to go to college somewhere. You're dealing with kids that have some real needs, some real
lifelong challenges,
mm-hmm. you know, and at the same time, they're going to have to figure out, and their families are going to have to help them figure out how they're going to continue to live and live on, and hopefully live on their own. Do a lot of your kids have the opportunity, or will they have the ability to live on their own, or will they always be in group homes, or what would they be in?
I was going to say, it depends on how you define living on their own.
Yeah.
As living on their own, as in their own apartment by themselves, mm-hmm. most of our students would probably need some support. Uh-huh. Some of our higher functioning students, they may be able to live in an apartment, but someone will definitely need to check in periodically and help with the money management aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Just the planning aspect of having a home. Most of our students, though, will either remain with family mm-hmm. or will our students would consider it independently. If they're living with their friends in a group home, they would consider that independent of their parents. Uh-huh. And so they would view that as living independently.
And so give us like we've got to watch what's being said and what isn't being mm-hmm. said, but the Bridges program, give us a basic kind of like what's the norm of why a student goes into the Bridges program? Help us. Who actually enters the Bridges program, and why are they in the Bridges program?
So all of our students have some type of disability or ability, more specifically. Oh, sorry. So they, in order to be eligible, they have to have a disability. They have to have an IEP, which is an individualized education plan, to be eligible to come in. We kind of run the gamut of abilities in our program. You know, we have students who are working on basic life skills and require a lot of assistance from our staff. You know, all the way up to students who are taking classes independently in the college, and we're providing, you know, some guidance and support there. So, you know,
let me break in for 1 second on that. Okay, so in during my years in high school, okay, and I graduated in, gosh darn, 78. Okay, so everybody can figure that out now. So I graduated in 78, but there were kids in school, because we didn't have, like, the special needs, you know, division or a group of kids or, you know, our teachers that were dealing with the special needs kids. But you had things like where kids took, like, home ec. Mm-hmm. You know, they took more, like, life skills training classes. Would those kids, would that be similar to some of the special needs? Or do you have that where you're teaching the kids how to cook for themselves or kind of sew? I mean, they even had sewing back then, you know?
Right. That's part of our program. We do try to teach daily living skills. So Christine handles the vocational portion where the students can go out. She helps them with their work experiences.
Okay.
On the other end of it, when they're back on campus, they... Mm-hmm. Do daily living skills. So one day a week, we'll send them out to the YMCA where they will learn how to exercise and access the public facilities.
Okay.
So they'll go to the YMCA one day they'll go to the community, and then so two of those days out of the month, they'll go out shopping or do something recreational for fun. And this is all student-generated activities. The students come up with the ideas. And the other 2 weeks
you drive
that they're
them,
back...
Or they're on a bus. And
yeah, right, they're
and
on
there's
a bus.
Teachers with them,
right.
Aides are with
right.
them.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're
You're
supporting
not just sending them out on their own, going,
no.
Go shopping
yeah.
today.
No.
That's the kind of school I want to go to.
We're supporting them all along the way. Mm-hmm. And they also come up, they do cooking once a month. Usually more frequently than once a month, but at a minimum, once a month, they're cooking, preparing simple meals that they could prepare at home. One day a week, they're in the house learning chores, how to do laundry, how to do the dishes. And one of the days out of the week, they're gardening.
Okay.
Either in the greenhouse or out in our garden.
Hmm.
And really, once we get going with the garden, they use a lot of the vegetables out of the garden for cooking activities, so they can kind of see it full circle. You know, they started those things from seed in the greenhouse all the way up to harvesting and bringing it in to make a meal out of it.
And all of a sudden, we're having rump roast with our carrots.
Yeah.
You know, our carrots
exactly.
and our potatoes.
Yeah. Right.
That is awesome. Okay. And so you don't have to worry. I mean, do you ever have to worry as far as, well, heck, what am I saying? I leave the stove on once a week. I leave a burner on. I mean, I really do. I take off my hot tea and I'm do something else. And then I walk back and go, well, that burner's bright red, you know, I mean, because I'm always forgetting and leaving things on, you know.
Well, it's all
but,
part
I mean,
of the
that's
process.
All part of it. And is that harder for the kids? I mean, are those issues that you're more concerned about or?
Yeah, but we try to work that in. We have a program on the iPad called Jolt, and it's kind of a checklist program, but we would build that into the checklist. So, you know, cooking is, you know, the actual cooking activity, but then the steps at the end are making sure the oven's off, making sure that the dishes are washed, making sure that you've taken out the trash so that the house doesn't smell the next day. So we really try to kind of build in those things that we're concerned about, because we really want the students to become as independent as possible while they're with us.
Right.
And we want them to kind of have a voice and a choice in what they do. So when they are responsible for those things, we see their confidence build over time. And then they feel like, you know, then it's just part of the process. And they know at the end, hey, I have to make sure, double check that the stove is off.
Right.
We try to build in a lot of repetitive routines. So then it just becomes second nature for them.
Right. Yeah, well, you'd think it was second nature for me, and I still forget, you know. So,
so
there's
do we.
Some there's something as far as a disconnect there.
It's
you
called
know?
Being human.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I was running down the steps early this morning. I thought, you know, and at Peabody, it was always safety, safety, safety. And I always hold on to the banister, and I had my hands full. I thought, uh-uh, because nobody wants to find me at the bottom of the staircase, you know, and Mike was not at the house. I'm thinking, I don't need to land at the bottom of one of those landings, you know, because I wasn't holding on. So I put stuff down and thought, I just run back up the stairs and get the rest of it because I was doing a bunch of stuff. And then I thought, well, shoot, I can just throw the sheets over the balcony. So I did. I just said, heck, the heck with that. I'm not carrying them down. I'll just throw them over the balcony.
There you go. You know? Problem solving. It worked. That's part of it, too.
Yeah. Right. And that's what I was going to ask you. So do the kids work on problem solving issues and how to kind of think things through or take different, I mean, you know, because nothing is a straight line. Nothing has to be A to B as a straight line. And they probably are more creative. Do I want a job?
Yeah, would you like to be a paraprofessional?
What is that?
It's our aides.
No, it's our aides. So that's exactly what we try to do is we try to create situations where the students have to problem solve.
Okay, good. Yeah.
And so the idea is that our paraprofessionals are there to make sure that the students don't get lost, don't get injured, and don't get taken advantage of.
Yeah.
Other than that, the students really need to be solving the problems.
Because I would think taking advantage, I would think some people do try to take advantage of them.
Yeah, it's hard. We don't really see that as much because they're out with staff and in the community.
But like at home do you hear that at all?
We have had to address situations like that before in the past.
I would think so.
It is unfortunate because our students are typically very good-hearted and good-natured. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their intent is to help somebody or to do something or let them borrow money. They needed, you know, money for this. I wanted to help them. And really, in hindsight, you know, they were being taken advantage of. So those conversations sometimes are hard, but they're also necessary conversations to have. With
guys. Right. Absolutely.
And it's a good opportunity for us to teach the students self-advocacy, to be able to speak up for themselves and to identify when people are taking advantage of them. They don't always know, and it's our job to sit there and point it out very, very black and white as to why that isn't an okay situation. So those are sometimes hard conversations.
I'm in awe of you women because you're both so calm, cool, and collected, and you're still raising families. You know, you're still doing the run to Schnucks or Deerbergs or, you know, and the Walmart at 9:30 at night and the whole nine yards, too. You know what I mean? I'm in awe how you pull it all off, you know? This is
one
great.
Step at a time.
One step at a time.
Yeah, you have to take one day at a time. It is a difficult balance. I think for anyone, mom that is working, I think it's a difficult balance.
And that's why what we say is, you know, strong women, may we know them, may we raise them, may we be them. And of course, on Cocktails and Conversation, it's all about, and may we praise them because we're all working and we're all spinning 20 plates at a time and trying to do them all perfectly. We know that sometimes a plate does drop. So use plastic sometimes, ladies. It does help, you know. But no, it's something where it is about strong women and supporting each other and really kind of coming together and not just advocating for strong women, but praising them for all the jobs, the many jobs that they do every day just to kind of keep everything rolling and working together. And husbands, we do know that you do things too.
Yes,
right?
I do.
We do.
Yes. They help out.
Yes,
we couldn't make it without them.
We couldn't make it without them. You know, Mike Moore likes to... I can't say some of the things he likes to say because he'd probably go, I was left supervised. I wasn't unsupervised, you know. But we're going to be back in a second. This is Maureen Moore here on Cocktails and Conversation. Today, hosting Christine Gooding and Robin Lewis, both from District 201 at Belleville West. Well, District 201.
Yeah.
Is
in
it
Belleville.
Just Belleville West or is that Belleville East too?
East.
It is Belleville East too, yeah. And the nice thing is my hometown, of course, I was an Altoff girl, so a shout out for Altoff. But this is, they are part of the Bridges program at District 201. So we'll be back in just a minute. So raise your glass if you are wrong. In all the right ways, all my underdogs.
We will never be anything but loud and nitty gritty. We now return to Cocktails and Conversation with Maureen Moore on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
And we're back here on 590 The Fan here with Cocktails and Conversation. Of course, I'm Maureen Moore. I'm the host of Cocktails and Conversation, always having wonderful, interesting women on the show. And because it's all about may we know them, may we raise them, may we be them, and best of all, may we praise them. And today we have Christine Gooding and Robin Lewis, both here from the Bridges program in District 201. That's Belleville. That's over in St. Clair County, folks. And it's a wonderful area, a wonderful county. The nice thing is I was an Altoff girl, but they are Belleville East and Belleville West for District 201. And as we kind of come back into this, you know, some of the things, I guess first, Christine, with the vocational training, how do people, you know, I mean, we were lucky with Saddleback that we're able to to bring some of your students into the production, the chocolate factory. But how do we actually, how do other people reach out to you? I mean, I saw Bob Dom at the grocery store as we were picking out vegetables. So how would other people reach you to know that they could actually bring students in and train them and work with them and hopefully be able to hire them to be employees?
Yeah, well, you can always call us at 618-222-7690.
222-7690. That's area code 618-222-7690. Okay.
You can always call us, but you're right. A lot of it is word of mouth, and we're always out in the community trying to promote our program and promote our students. I mean, we have great students, and they do have a lot of abilities. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, all about partnering with businesses and finding what kind of need we can meet for you. We want it to be a mutually beneficial partnership where, with a lot of businesses that we've worked with, and I know we have talked about the potential of hiring somebody at Saddleback Chocolates, but, you know, it's kind of a trial period to see if it's a good fit. You know, they volunteer for a short period of time. And then if it's a good fit, the business hires them. We've had a lot of partnerships like that. But otherwise, it's good experience. And, you know, it gives the student an opportunity to decide if this is something they want to do. But a lot of our program, our partnerships have come based on word of mouth. And then also having students interested, you know, having students interested in working at a particular place. Mm-hmm. And then I approach the business and see if they're open to hiring.
So they were all dying to go work in a chocolate factory and be Willy Wonka, weren't they?
I have to say, the chocolate, when we talked about the chocolate, everybody was on board with the chocolate.
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. That's just it. Everybody. And I have friends. I got to tell you, I have friends, you know, and I had a friend today that called me this morning. She says, hey, I'm out running around. Do you need any help at the factory? I said, I think I'm actually going to start something where I'll get them all certified. And then, like, maybe once a month, I'll say, it's Ladies' Day, at, you know, and we can all be Lucy and Ethel today, you know, and we'll do Ladies' Day and everybody can line up and do the gold dusting and the whole bit with the chocolate, you know, because it is fun. It is fun. You walk in and see, I don't even notice it anymore. You walk in and people go, oh, my God, the smell here is just phenomenal.
Oh, I say that every time.
Do you really?
Poor Barb. I say it every time I walk in. Yeah. She's like, I know.
Yeah. And see, and Barb, because I'm allergic to the chocolate, I hardly touch it or eat it or anything, you know. Barb, on the other hand, she's my left and my right arm, Barb Williams. And she's been with me 11 years.
Really? She's so sweet.
She used to give me the two-headed looks when I'd say, we're going to do something. She'd look at me. Now she's like, you know, she tells people, just get used to her. It'll be fine. Just get used to her. She's, you know, trust me, and her bark's worse than her bite, you know, and everything's okay, you know. Uh-huh. But, you know, we're excited to have the students from the Bridges program. We are really excited about it because I would rather be able to help a few kids that don't have as many opportunities be able to create an opportunity. It's good for us. It's, you know, it's something that we really want. And because there's a lot of kids that have 20 opportunities and they have their pick of everything, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, and we all know that. You
it's
know,
good
right,
for
Robin?
Our students, too, because they are just like everybody else, want to be contributing members to the community. They want to have that job. They want to earn a paycheck just like everybody else. So when we can find a position where they can earn that paycheck, they're going to be the most loyal employee you've ever found.
Yeah, they'll never call in sick, you know.
Right, they don't.
That's nice.
And that's the thing. And that's how it is with school, too. They want to come. They want to be there every day. Mm-hmm. They hate calling off of school. They're very, very loyal.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to say kind of kudos to our district and administration for, we are not a cheap program to operate.
I bet.
But they are on board with, you know, our mission of educating, you know, students with disabilities in the most realistic environment possible. And we're doing that in a house on 10 acres. And
yeah, Bob Golby's old house.
I know.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Right. That just alone, the legend, you know, to have that house. Yeah. Well, I should say Bob and Sarah Golby's house.
Yeah.
I should say, because I know Sarah did a lot of the decorating and everything.
Which is still there.
It was still there. It's just a beautiful home. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is nice to be able to provide these opportunities for our students, because a lot of other districts don't have that luxury.
Yeah. And so tell me about that. Like, how do you, I mean, you know, I'm thinking of all the surrounding districts, and if other districts don't have that program, what happens to those kids? Where do they go? I mean, or can they apply to come into the district, or what happens?
No. They have to live in district to attend our program. We have had students move in to the district just to attend. But O'Fallon has a program that's similar. They kind of modeled theirs after ours. They have an off-campus house. But a lot of your smaller districts don't have that luxury to purchase a home and run a program like that.
Nor do they have the population, really. I think that our school district, we have we had started the school year with 70 students in our program. Mm-hmm. And most schools, especially the smaller ones, don't even have 70 in their entire special education program for the whole high school. So we have the numbers that justify the need for an off-campus
And bring
facility.
That up because you've got the special education program in the district as well.
Right.
So how many classrooms or how many kids are in special ed, you know, in the district?
I think district wide, I want to guess about 500.
Wow.
I believe.
Okay.
You could probably look on our report card online.
Yeah.
But I think about 500.
Oh my goodness.
But that's split between two high schools also. So you're talking 250.
So do your kids then have to apply to come into the program? Or what happens? Where do all those kids go once they graduate?
Well, I think it's an IEP team decision. So at their meeting, their senior year, you know, the parents are involved, the case manager. I myself or some teacher in the program typically attends meeting for students who could potentially come to us. And it's really kind of a group decision if the student wants to come. We feel like they could benefit if the parents are on board.
Is there a limited amount of students that can come into the program? Is it something where you've got a waiting list or what?
We almost had we had a waiting list this year. We kind of maneuvered some things to where we had some students kind of overflow at Belleville West High School, but we pretty much hit capacity at about 65 to 70. Just when you think sheer numbers, you know, the number of buses, number of support staff, and there's only so many places on the property that you can go and out in the community. So we do kind of hit a limit at a certain point.
And Robin, you know, how many, like, what do you guys have as far as administrators, teachers, you know, assistant staff, you know, members? How many, what do you have as far as,
well,
like, kind of what's your ratio between, you know, staff or professional to students?
So typically we try to keep our groups pretty small. As far as when we go out into the community, we try to keep it at 4 students to 1 paraprofessional. So typically the paraprofessionals are taking the students out into the community, and then us teachers are functioning really as coordinators and program developers. We're not standing in front of a classroom giving a lesson. We're not developing lesson plans per se as what a special educator would do in a classroom. We are coming up with projects and programs and things for the students to participate in and be a part of, but the paraprofessionals are really our implementers. We're giving instructions to the paraprofessionals. They are implementing our ideas, essentially.
And how many paraprofessionals? Say that word 3 times fast.
Right, I know.
You know,
19. We have 19.
19.
In our
okay. Wow. Okay. Because it just seems like the place is always hopping. You know,
it's always happening.
You walk in, you go, whew, okay, where is everyone? And who's running this ship right now? And who's the captain of the ship? You know, that is
wild. Ask ourselves that sometimes, too.
Yeah, it's organized chaos some days, but it is organized. And, you know, everybody has a board and a schedule to follow. So although it may seem very busy and
it is busy,
everybody knows where they're going and where they're supposed to be.
And it's amazing how quickly the students pick up on that.
Oh, I bet.
Where they're supposed to be. They know their schedule better than we do.
And how, what's the school time frame or the, you know, what is it? Is it just during school year? And is it, what time do schools even start these days? I mean, our kids have been out long enough that I don't even know what time school starts anymore.
We go 8:30 to 2:30.
8:30 to 2:30, okay.
And, is, we follow the Belleville West school schedule.
That's what it is, okay. Yeah, tells you what I know. Yeah. So then, and then when do you finally get out of there? Do you have a lot of paperwork? Do you have IEPs you have to do?
Right.
You've got all that paperwork that you have to do, too.
Yeah, the teachers are finished at 3:30. We typically meet as a group at the end of each day, kind of plan and rehash things throughout the day, how we could
problem
do other things better.
You can see I had chocolate because I'm itching.
I
had 3 pieces of our new Kismet chocolate, and I'm itching because I'm so allergic to it. Yeah. Well, good chocolate does that to me. You know, some of the stuff that you can buy that's, like, really, really good and made by big, big companies, it could go to Mars and back, and it would never break up or anything, and I could eat it forever. My chocolate, I break out in hives.
Oh, my gosh.
So you're going to get to see the girl in hives soon. Jim, cut all that out, okay? Yeah, we don't want that in there. Because I don't know, I don't want to be sued by Hershey's or somebody later. Shoot. Yeah, so let's also talk about, okay, so since you've got such a demanding program. If you had a wish list, what would be your wish list? What would be some of the things that you would really, really, really want or ask or be able to, you know, to use? Because I know you guys do a lot as far as funding and raising funds to do all these extra projects and such. So,
we do.
You know, I mean, and I know the district's been great to you as far as financially great to you as far as supporting with, you know, with staff, with transportation, with, you know. But what would be a wish list if you had one?
We could create quite a long one.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. Yeah. Well, it really depends on what group of students, you know, you're talking about. I think for some of our students who are kind of working on the basic life skills and mm-hmm. and participating in the larger program, going out into the community every day can be kind of difficult and overwhelming for them.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, having like a sensory room and swings and fish tanks and things that's kind of calming. Mm-hmm. You know, I know there's a lot of things. We're doing stuff with Aircrete now and plastic shredding. You know, we really kind of have developed like an entrepreneurship mindset.
Uh-huh.
We want to start and create small businesses for our students that where they can get experience with us and then transfer those skills into some type of employment.
Oh, okay.
I'm currently working with a t-shirt design company. Mm-hmm. We have a little extra money, and whenever there's a little extra money, we always have a wish list of things.
Excuse me.
But we're looking at, you know, starting kind of a t-shirt printing business for our students.
So we like to be self-sustaining. We realize mm-hmm. that we are
right.
Expensive. So we try to do projects that fit a lot of bills.
Mm-hmm.
Developing work skills and life skills for our students is the number one priority. And then being able to do that in a unique and engaging way. And then also being able to do that without additional costs. So those are all big challenges.
Wow, my head's spinning trying to think that one through and trying to figure that out. Mm-hmm.
Well, luckily we're all very creative in mm-hmm. our own way. Like we all have bring something to the table. So we started a gardening program a few years ago because the students were interested in gardening. So what started as just gardening for fun mm-hmm. in a couple of raised garden beds has turned into a community-supported agriculture program where we have 30 members who pay us $250 each to grow vegetables for them for a season. So, and that's what the students, that's our job, and that's how we sustain our gardening program. So
wow.
We have 30 members
yeah.
that pay us
uh-huh.
to grow their vegetables. So the students start all of the vegetable plants in the greenhouse,
uh-huh.
transplant it out into the garden. We have 900 raised garden beds.
You start it with three. You have 100 raised garden beds.
We have 100. Yeah. We have 100 now.
That is phenomenal.
And it has all been, and the materials that we've received have been from donations
mm-hmm.
or getting things at discounts from our community businesses.
Okay.
Home Depot has been wonderful about donating all sorts of stuff to
us.
And Bob has been instrumental. I know, you know, Bob, about getting partnerships. Mm-hmm. He knows just about everyone in Belleville.
Bobby Dom. Yes.
Yes.
And see, I still call him Bobby Dom.
Yeah.
Yes.
So do a lot of people. But
mm-hmm.
when you call him Bobby, you get a lot more.
Oh, yeah. You go, oh, it's Bobby Dom. Yeah. You know, it was funny when I ran into him in the grocery store that day. I'm like,
yeah.
Bobby Dom, you know?
Yeah, he knows a lot of people, which has greatly benefited our program.
Family.
It is
a wonderful family.
It does help a lot making those connections to the community.
Oh, yeah.
So we not only do we enjoy partnering with people in the community, mm-hmm. but we also want to support our fellow community members.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, people are paying us to grow their vegetables.
Uh-huh.
The students are getting such valuable experience with packaging up the vegetables and delivering those. Now that we have 30 members, that kind of presses our capacity.
You guys gotta be pretty busy.
We are busy. And
she's busy. You're not allowed in the garden.
No, I killed the plants.
We would allow her. She's making this up so that she doesn't have to come out and volunteer.
We have fresh horse manure if anybody needs it.
Ooh, well, we might actually.
Yeah, we've got some great, you know, and these are good thoroughbreds, you know. Oh. So, I mean, they're very well. They've been very well bred.
So we'll have hearty vegetables.
Yes, yes, they're very well bred, yes.
No, but when we don't have enough vegetables, we like to purchase from local farmers.
Okay.
So we try to still to keep everything into the community. And I think that's something that we really
are
conscientious
about. And
then
donate a lot back to the food pantry.
Do you?
Additional?
Yeah.
I think how many pounds? Do we remember how many pounds we donated?
Well, we grew close to 3,000 pounds of produce last summer. So the majority of that goes to our CSA members, but, and then I would say probably 20% of what we grow
was donated back to the food pantry.
So,
and you're not growing stuff like turnips that nobody wants to eat.
We are.
You are?
Of course.
Along with everything else.
Oh my gosh. And so that's another part of the student's job, though, is we have students coming up with recipe cards. Okay. So we put recipes in with every bag. We try to see how many different jobs
we
can create.
Why don't you tell her some of the stuff we grow? Because I'm afraid she thinks we just grow turnips.
We don't. And I'm probably going to have the Turnip Association, the National Turnip Association, going, turnips are good for you, you know?
Right.
And I know they are. I just couldn't eat them.
Well, we do grow some random things that most people don't eat, like collard greens. And
oh, my husband, Mike Moore, would love your collard greens. Mike Moore would love those. Yeah.
Well, Mike Moore can have some.
Will you give him some?
We always grow too much.
Mike Moore would love those. Yeah.
Collard greens, okra, turnips, but we do grow your standard garden.
Great. Awesome. This is great. Well, ladies, I have to say thank you so much for coming today and being guests on the show here on Cocktails and Conversation. I have Christine Gooding and Robin Lewis here from District 201, the Bridges Program, and they have been excellent, informative, and gracious guests today. So thank you both, ladies, for all of your help. Thanks. I think we should do a cheers to the ladies of our show. So thank you very much. And so for next week, tune in for Cocktails and Conversation. This is Maureen Moore, 590 The Fan. Thank you.